The tariffs set to hit the Switch 2 have been paused for 90 days, but there's still a lot of uncertainty. Plus, I'll tell you how Nintendo could have lowered the cost of Mario Kart World. Tonight is April 13th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
This episode's probably going to be out of date by the time we get to this. Who knows? Everything's changing all the time. New numbers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, welcome. Come join us. We do try to take the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at that Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But like, we are a podcast, and this might be out of date by the time you get the podcast. I apologize for that. But you can find us on our Discord server. VogNetwork.com/Discord is where you can find us throughout the week and give us suggestions and give us your takes, because a lot of discussions do have over there. We don't ping you, so it's not like you're going to get pinged by things. But that's where we can kind of get the sense of what you want to be talking about. So let's just kind of dive right in, because I know there's a topic that people want to talk about, which is a little bit later on in the show roll. It's over here on the, if you're watching live, there's a little thing over here on the left side of the screen that has all of the topics we're going to be talking about. But let's kind of follow up on what we talked about last week, about the ongoing economic situation and the things that we are doing here in the country, in the United States. Switch 2 pre-orders have not come out yet. We don't know when they're coming out yet. They might be coming soon, but we don't actually know. But what we do know is that Nintendo is still actively assessing it. And this was an article in Wired last week that said, Wired reports that in the run-up to the Switch 2 launch, part of Nintendo's focus has been on ensuring it can meet the demands of an audience hungry for a new console. But that could go up. So in an interview the day after the United States announcement about the sweeping reciprocal tariffs against basically every other nation in the world, essentially, Nintendo of America President Doug Bowser told Wired that the tariffs were not factored into the pricing of the console, which is something that I had assumed was true. Or made a guess that it was true, and it's not. Like, according to Doug Bowser, they did not factor the tariffs in the price of the console. But he did say that the company is actively assessing the situation and its impact, and he says, quote, "It creates a challenge. It's something we're going to have to address," unquote. So, part of the company's business strategy to this point has been what they're saying, quote, "to diversify the places we are manufacturing on our hardware and our accessories." This is from Doug Bowser, unquote. And he said that the company has already shifted much of its production to Vietnam and Cambodia and away from China. So my Switch, my launch day Nintendo Switch, was manufactured in China. It says it on the back. It's on the bottom. It's in white text. On the bottom, they started doing them from Vietnam pretty recently. According to Bowser, that diversification allowed Nintendo to move production around as needed during the pandemic. He says, quote, "that also applied to the early stages of the tariffs. The situation on April 2nd changed that," unquote. So on April 2nd, as we talked about last week, there was a 46% tariff levied on Vietnam, 49% on Cambodia, and at the time, 54% on China. That is not what it is now. So essentially what has happened since then is that the United States has offered has started a a 90-day stay on those reciprocal tariffs, the 46%, the 49%. which basically gets us to about July 8th, I believe, because I think it's 90 days from April 9th when they were supposed to go into effect. So that would be July 8th, which is after the June 5th launch of the Switch 2. It does not mean all the tariffs go away. So Vietnam, instead of a 46% tariff, it's 10%, where it was zero. But so now it's 10%. And that's something that Nintendo might be able to eat the cost of, which means they won't have to raise the price of the Switch 2 in America. Now, it is does not apply to Canada and Mexico. Canada and Mexico still have a 25% tariff. And then China, which was 54%, and this is relevant to the other stories I talked about last week. It was 54%. It went up to like 73%, and then it went up to 104%, and it went up to 125%. And right now, today, on April 13th, I should look up at the top of the screen. It's right there. On April 13th, it is currently 145% tariff on all products coming into the U.S. from China, which includes raw materials that a lot of places here use to assemble things, because things that are made in the USA are usually are assembled here, but not all of the parts are manufactured here. So like we were talking about board games and tabletop games and things like that. They are designed and assembled here in America, but the parts, the pieces, the custom die, the custom game pieces, the custom things like that, there is no manufacturing in the United States to do those at scale for the amount of people that are making board games, the amount of small businesses and small creators that are making board games and tabletop games. China has that infrastructure. And now those raw materials are going to, it's going to cost them, they're going to have to pay 145% of the cost of that raw material to the United States government just to get that in to their product, even though they assemble it here. And in manufacture, you know, probably the final piece of the puzzle is here, but a lot of the raw materials come from China because they have catered to a lot of the niche products that we just don't have the manufacturing infrastructure, and we won't have it for 5 or 6 years. So that's not going to affect the Nintendo Switch 2, but it is going to affect your like Steve Jackson games if you play board games that Steve Jackson Games makes, or any of the other kind of more indie board games, and not the ones that come up from Hasbro or even Ravensburger, which has a lot of great games. They're more niche than, you know, Monopoly and stuff, but they're still a large company and they have other manufacturing. So and Questbush says many of the machines also needed to produce many of these products are made in China. So even if you did want to manufacture these pieces in America, you have to import the machine from China, because it's got to be made somewhere, and the machines are made in China, and so you would import it over here, and so that's 145%. So that all goes into your profit margins and, you know, how much you charge for something. So I believe that the idea is that by 2035, the United States will be self-sufficient enough to be able to have all of the things that we used to be able to purchase in 2024. Except now all of those things will be completely manufactured inside the United States. I believe that is the current goal. So it's going to be about 10 years of sacrifice of us not being able to have as much or paying a lot more and not being able to afford things until 2035 when everything's going to be better. So I believe that's the quote-unquote plan. Whether you agree with that or not, or believe that to be the case or not, I understand, but that is essentially the plan, is that by 2035, we are going to see all of the positives. That's the long-term positives over the short-term negative of us not having U.S.-made board or not having board games in the U.S., you know, not having any of that for 10 years. So it's a short-term sacrifice in the grand scheme of things, if you ask people who are happy about all this and stuff. And, you know, Nintendo should manufacture the Switch, their video game consoles in the U.S. And that, but Nintendo's probably not going to do that because there's only 350 million people in the U.S. and there are 7 billion people in the world that also would buy a Nintendo Switch 2. But anyway, Nintendo is still actively assessing the tariff situation, and they are they haven't come out and said what they're going to do with pre-orders. However, they will most likely be able to eat the cost of the tariff on Vietnam, assuming it doesn't go up, is assuming he doesn't change his mind. You know, obviously things can change just tomorrow. All those reciprocal tariffs, that 90-day may turn into 9 days, and, you know, all bets are off. We probably should be hearing about pre-orders here in the United States pretty soon, and it will most likely stay the same price that it is now, which people believe is still too high, but there are people that are going to absolutely pay $450 for a Switch 2 as well. And what we've said is that the value of a product is what one person is willing to sell it for, combined with what someone else is willing to buy it for. And if consumers in general are willing to pay $450 for a Switch 2, that is the value of a Switch 2, even if you personally are not willing to pay $450 for a Switch 2. So let's talk about the games, because this is something that is actually not about the tariff. So now we're going to leave the tariff conversation to the side. We're not going to talk about it. So this is about the games. And this is a completely separate conversation from the tariff conversation. So now we're not going to talk politics. We're not going to talk, you know, what's going on between countries, because this is not I don't believe that this is anything to do with any of that. This is more a trend in the AAA gaming industry. And this is going to be something that there is a harsh truth I'm going to get to in about probably 15 to 20 minutes. That AAA companies really need to start thinking about, and then we need to start thinking about, is this worth it? And I have said, everybody's like, do you think we're going to see another video game crash like we did in 1982? I don't think the entire video game industry is going to crash like it did in 1982. I believe the AAA video game industry is going to crash at some point, or something's going to happen. There's going to be a shift. If it's not a complete crash, it's going to be something in the AAA gaming industry. And this is kind of highlighting what some of that is. So first, I want to talk about misinformation on the internet. And I think it was even brought up in our chat room last week when we were talking about this, when we were talking about the price of games. Mario Kart World is listed as an $80 game. It's listed at $79.99. That is its MSRP here in the United States. Apparently, there's a bunch of people that believe, no, the digital version is $80. The physical version is $90. Now, nowhere in Nintendo's stuff does it say that. No store that has a store page, the Evil G, Walmart, wherever, Best Buy, wherever, none of them have the physical version at $90. That doesn't mean that people don't believe it's fact. Digital Trends reports that everybody is talking about, you know, there's a bunch of stories with a bunch of engagement on social media. You know, they're daring, and there's a lot of stuff, like, they're daring people to try to justify the $90 price tag of Mario Kart World. It's not $90. Nintendo has never said it's $90. No store has said it's $90. But everybody believes that it's the physical version of Mario Kart World is $90 MSRP. It's not. It's $80. So in the immediate chaos following the Switch 2's reveal, players were left to dig up information themselves. The Switch 2 Direct didn't even state the console's price. That's because they didn't know what the console's price was going to be when they filmed the Direct literally a month and a half ago. Like, the Nintendo films those Directs like 2 months in advance. So it was like February when they filmed that Direct. So, of course, they're not going to put the price in there, because we're not trustworthy here in the United States right now to have sound economic policy for longer than a week. So this was confusing, but Nintendo's lack of transparency caused even more confusion around the games. It didn't take long for players to discover that Mario Kart World and some Nintendo Switch 2 editions of original Switch games will retail for $80. Variable pricing for games only made matters harder to understand, as heavy hitters like Donkey Kong Bonanza will only be $70. Somewhere in that rapid learning process, word began to spread that the physical editions of some Switch 2 games would cost €90. That fact quickly mutated into a different one entirely, that physical Switch 2 games cost $90. It's hard to pinpoint where exactly that jump originated from, but it's easy to see how someone could have misinterpreted it. Maybe they assumed the euro symbol was a dollar sign. Maybe they mistakenly assumed that two things are one-to-one. Whatever happened, it's a detail that should have been debunked. But it wasn't debunked. It spread like wildfire, and people are still saying it to this day. What Digital Trends is saying is, like, how could this have happened? The internet is becoming more harmful than helpful by the day. Social media platforms built to drive engagement through outrage. And I don't outrage people enough. That's why we don't have that many people watching this, which is why I actually really like hanging out with our audience, and I don't really want to change that. But in an increasing reliance on inaccurate AI tools to source the news are making us dumber. And the Switch 2 pricing rumor is only one small bit of that. So, a quick Google search along the lines of Switch 2 games $90 will inevitably bring up a Reddit thread from r/games, which is apparently the more mature version of r/gaming, by the way. Entitled Nintendo Switch 2 will cost $80 for digital, $90 for physical. The post includes a link to an article from Insider Gaming, a website known as a source for video game leaks. Insider Gaming's was a small handful of sites to run with the story that a physical Switch 2 games cost $90 early on. Websites like Forbes repeated the same information on April 2nd in an article that includes no source for the claim and even mentions the 90 euro detail. The article has not been corrected in the week since its publication. Insider Gaming, on the other hand, did change its article. So if you click the story, it says Nintendo Switch 2 games will cost up to $98 for physical games when converted from euros. There's a correction midway down the article, but that change isn't reflected in the Reddit thread that dominates the search. And then Google, if you Google it and you don't include a curse word, Gemini comes in and it gives its own AI thing. And the thing about generative AI right now, still in 2025, is that AI doesn't understand context. Generative AI today, this could change, but let me look at the date right here, April 13th, 2025, generative AI doesn't understand context. It doesn't know that that was misinformation. It just knows it was information. It is using Reddit to source its information. And Reddit, a lot of people are saying that the physical version of Mario Kart World is $90. It's not, but the Gen AI doesn't know that it's not. It just knows that a lot of people are saying it's $90. Some people are saying it's not, but a lot of people are saying it's $90. So let's go with what the majority can't be wrong, basically. It's got a higher confidence that it's $90. If you were to Google how much are Switch 2 games right now, there's a good chance you'll get an AI interview that physical games could or do cost $90. And it also says Nintendo Switch 2 games are expected to be priced higher than previous Nintendo Switch titles, with many games potentially costing $79.99 or even $89.99. And sometimes they don't say the words potentially. Sometimes they don't. They just say they will, like, just period. It will. Gemini does give some links. There's a link on the blurb about the $90 price point. It goes to an article from Indie 100 that says outright that Mario Kart World costs $90 with no source. They are the source to Google AI, but they didn't give a source. Other cited links point to articles from Mashable and CNET. The latter actually debunks the $90 claim, but that hasn't stopped Google's AI for using it as a source to back up its faulty information. Once again, it doesn't understand context. It just knows Mario Kart, it's saying, okay, what's the most likely next word in this sentence? Mario Kart World is $90. That's the most likely thing, so that's what it's going to tell you. It doesn't know that that's stating an incorrect fact and they're debunking it. It just knows that's what's there. Fifth Dream says, the internet, that's where we're already dumb enough on our own. See, humans, fault. Scroll past the summary, stop reading it, stop believing it. Here's the actual million-dollar, billion-dollar question. The fact is, Mario Kart World is the first big $80 title for a base game. And the real problem, and people don't like this because it doesn't make Nintendo the problem, the real problem is that your wage and my wage, what we get paid, hasn't gone up with everything else. So when the price increase happens for our luxury goods and our wage doesn't go up in the same manner, it's not good. And unfortunately, it costs even more money to make a AAA title now than it did when we had worse hardware. Let's use worse hardware. So, Mario Kart World. In the past, Nintendo has always tried to innovate and tried to push boundaries. And unfortunately, doing all that comes at a cost to them. So there was always going to come a time when, in order to realize profit margins on a title that they spent that kind of budget on, they would need to raise the price of that title. And that's what Nintendo did. So, how could Mario Kart World's price have been lowered to a more sensible $60? There's a term in software development called scope creep. And if you just say, oh, there's a new Mario Kart and it's $80, a lot of people, and if you don't look into the details, people are going to be like, how? Mario Kart is Mario Kart is Mario Kart is Mario Kart. Like, it's all the same. It's always the same. It's just new tracks. But that's not what they did with Mario Kart World. Mario Kart World has 74 characters, and none of them are palette swaps. They each have their own animation that an animator went through, a designer designed, their attitude, and there's a lot of stuff that goes into a lot of that. And not only that, not only did they make courses, all those courses, but they also made an open world. So you drive between the courses. So they had to build all of that. And then there's a lot of stuff that when you're in free roam, you're in a race. That all costs money to implement all those sweeping new innovative ideas. How could Nintendo have made Mario Kart World $60? By not doing any of that. People only wanted, because people are like, I never asked for free roam in my Mario Kart. So they could have made it $60 by just saying, you know what? We're just going to make Mario Kart with prettier graphics, and it's going to be basically the same game. We're just going to, you know, give you new tracks. And, you know, did we really need all 74 characters? Are you going to play all 74 characters? No, you're probably not. There's going to be one person in the chat room be like, yes, absolutely. Okay, you're the outlier. I don't play most of the characters in Mario Kart. So why not only make 20 characters? You've saved a whole bunch of money on the budget. You've saved a lot of budget by only having 20 characters. And if you want, you can make DLC, make character packs, and, you know, maybe $5 to $10 for each character pack gets you another set of 20. But the base game is still 60. And then what they could have done is, oh, you want this free roam? Well, that's DLC. Now, at that point, the game's price to get all this stuff is over $80, but it doesn't matter because now you, as the consumer, whose wages have not gone up with the price of what things cost, you have a choice. Do we really need 74 characters in Mario Kart World? Do we really need free roam? Because you ask some people, they're like, well, it's always the same game. Mario Kart's always the same. So it shouldn't cost $80. All they're doing is the exact same game over and over again. And I think we're now at a point where innovation costs too much money for the end consumer. I think that's where we're at. And if we're not there yet, we're going to get there. Because it's getting to the point where even people are saying, this is a Nintendo problem. And I even saw something that was like, we live in a world where Mario Kart World's going to cost more than Grand Theft Auto 6. Because they don't believe Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be an $80 game. And it's because of different factors, Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to get you on the microtransactions. But right now, people assume that there's going to be DLC for Mario Kart World, but is there? Have they said? Like, I didn't watch all the Treehouse. They never said in the Treehouse stuff I watched that there was going to be added content So I guess they may have thought, instead of cutting out portions of the game and selling it as DLC, which I have heard for a long time, people hate it when companies do that. They're like, well, okay, well, it's going to cost $80. And maybe it comes time for the AAA industry to say, maybe we don't do that thing. Maybe we don't take that expensive risk. Maybe we just give the gamers the stuff that they're the thing they're used to with a prettier package. Cause they'll pay $60 for a Mario Kart with new tracks and, you know, better graphics. They'll pay for that. But if you try to add too much to that formula, you're going to have to raise the price too much, and our wages haven't gone up to be able to subsidize that. We can't pay for that anymore. Mike Def says, I think Free Roam was the next step in the franchise, but probably not that many characters. And Fifth Dream says, I'd pay this for a deluxe game, but not a base one, unless it's a Fallout. He likes Fallout. You know, everybody's got their own thing. But then people would be upset at Nintendo for nickel and diming us by saying, well, Free Roam should have been part of the base game. Why is it, you know, why is it DLC? Which is why now I'm saying maybe they just don't do it. Maybe you need to scale back. And there were people that were talking about Astrobot had a limited budget and, you know, look at everything it did and how much it sold. I can guarantee you that there were more features planned for Astrobot and there were more features designed that they cut because of budget. Nintendo doesn't cut things because of budget. Nintendo cuts things because they're not fun. And that means that the budgets are pretty, pretty high. We don't know what the budget for Mario Kart World was, but it's not small. And Dark Tatsuya says, character DLC worked for Smash. Heck, even Mario Kart 8 Deluxe had separate DLC. And that, but all that happened after. Would you have been okay having a $60 Mario Kart World that only had 20 characters and had Free Roam taken out of it and only had just the tracks and, you know, a battle mode or two, and then day one DLC that added $20 to $30 to the price, which would have made it $90, as they were saying in AI Landover, but added $20 to $30 of optional DLC that added the other characters and added the whole Free Roam aspect. Would you have been okay with that? And E3VL says, Free Roam isn't new. And no, it's not. It's new to Mario Kart. It's not a new concept. It's new to Mario Kart. And Dark Tatsuya says, as long as I can be Toad, I'd be fine with whatever else. But I do know that there's other people out there that would be very upset that something that seems like a fundamental part of the game, the Free Roam portion, a fundamental part of the game, is locked behind DLC. Why didn't they just include it in the game? Why am I buying an unfinished game? Why are you charging me $60 for an unfinished game? So Nintendo's charging you $80 for a finished game. And we also don't like that. So is it time for AAA studios to say, you know what, maybe we don't do those features at all? Not as DLC, just maybe there will be like a historical video like 10 years later that'll be like, yeah, we had a whole Free Roam concept, but the budget was going to be too high and, you know, we weren't going to be, you know, we didn't think gamers would pay for it. Then we'd be upset that they never actually did it. Why didn't they take that leap? Why didn't they take that innovation? And so maybe it's time that AAA studios say, you know what, maybe we don't need every feature under the sun in our game. Because gamers want beautiful graphics. Maybe they don't need anything else. And DJ Rama S says, yeah, 74 characters, I only play two. So they could have saved money by only giving, let's say, 20 characters. I think 20 is good. DJ Rama S says, Bobby, how about this? The games are more expensive so that the devs could be paid more. And I get that, because I'm a software developer myself, and I like to be paid more because I feel I'm worth being paid more. But it's also time that you've got to look at. So, I mean, I agree. Like, if I knew the developers were getting paid more, then I would be fine with it. But other people aren't. Like, you got to realize there are people that just can't afford an $80 game. And no amount of goodwill is going to allow them to afford an $80 game right now. This is the conundrum that a lot of AAA developers are going to have to come to grips with, is that how much time does it take to do this? Because essentially, a developer that maybe makes the same amount of money, but they work on a game and the game is in development for a year, if the game takes 2 or 3 years to make and that developer's on it, they've ultimately made more money while making that game. They're not made more money per week, but if a game takes 3 years to make instead of 1 year, the company has paid that developer theoretically three times as much. And that's where adding all of these features for a AAA, it takes more time, which means they have to pay the developers for longer. And so eventually, if you have a 3 year, a 4 year development cycle, and you have profit margins to make, and in Japan, developers are paid pretty well, from what I understand, because Mario Kart World was made in Japan. You know, maybe they need to take less time, and then they can lower the price lower than $80. Maybe they didn't need all those people to spend all that time making all those characters, and, you know, even if they're palette swaps, they're going to put some type of personality in them, because that's just how Nintendo rolls. Maybe they don't need to do that. Maybe they need to do more palette swaps. Maybe that's the answer. Instead of making 74 unique characters, make 20 characters and, you know, 60 palette swaps, where they just change the color and they have all the same animations and everything, and, you know, save money that way. Maybe that's the answer. The point is, scope creep is why games are going to cost more. And the good developers and the good managers limit scope creep. And a lot of it's because they want to hit a deadline, so they take away scope. But Nintendo probably didn't really have a real deadline, or they started early enough that they could put as much as they could into it, and they wanted to do as much as they could. And maybe now we need to have scope creep on budget instead of just time. How long does it take? Because if you spend too much money to make your game, you're going to have to charge too much money for the consumers. I'd love to know your thoughts. We're going to take a quick music break. We might be able to get a call in. So if you join the Green Room Voice Chat channel over in the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, we will be... maybe I'll take your call and you can tell me why I'm not all here on this, but that's the way that I see it. But Mario Kart World's not $90, but it is $80, and it's probably because they put too much into it. But we're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll take some of your calls about any of this. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show. Woohoo! It's a number one.
I thought Chatterbox Video Game Radio was number one.
I'm number one. The heck with everybody else. You're listening to the great radio show. Now have a rotten day.
Ah, simpler time with Charles Martinet. That was at the Wii launch, or not the Wii launch, the Wii E3, where they showed Wii at the E3 in 2006. If you want to leave a bumper, all you got to do is contact me on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and get me either audio of just your voice or video of just you and your voice. I'll choose which DMCA violation I'll put behind it. And it's about coming back to the Bobby Blackwolf show. We've been talking a lot about AAA games. And the reckoning, I mean, indie games are still, I don't think are going to be that affected in this, especially because a lot of them, they have lower budgets, but they wind up doing more with less. and they're not constrained by needing, you know, not all of them are constrained by needing the highest graphics possible and on all the detail that we expect from our AAA games. And that's why the Georgia Game Developer Association was in a little bit earlier before while I was talking to them about that. About that there is an indie game festival here in Atlanta. It's over in, if you're local, near Doraville. It's in Doraville. And it's run by the Georgia Game Developer Association. It is part of Siege, Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo. It is this Saturday. I am planning on going to check out the indie games that are not costing $80. So I might have something to talk about there as well. So... Dark Tetsuya asks, Mario Kart role will probably have Mario's new voice actor. Yes, because Mario's new voice actor's already been around. We've already gotten a couple games with Mario's new voice actor, who I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but he did fine. He was in Mario Kart, not Mario Kart, he was in Super Mario Wonder, and it was fine. Like, you know, Charles Martinet is getting old. Let him enjoy his retirement. Let him enjoy his convention circuit. He deserves it. D5T also says, you know what's also been going up in price is physical media for movies, especially 4K. Physical media sales decline equals companies are going to slap a premium on them. The other reason for that, to be perfectly honest, is because most of our discs are made in Mexico. And Mexico currently has a 25% tariff on it. And that's probably not going away anytime soon. And so all those discs now cost 25% more. And one of the things that we learn with the board game stuff is that, yes, even if it's still like it goes from $3 to $3.50 or something like that, all of the shipping is a percentage of what you paid for the main thing. So everything goes up, every part of the chain, the shipping, the storing, the warehousing, all of that, the freight, everything also goes up 25% because it is a percentage of the original item. So that's part of it, but also because they don't sell as much in terms of quantity, they are going to have to raise the price because a lot of people abandon physical media, which is a shame because, yes, I haven't abandoned physical media, especially on 4K and Blu-ray and things like that, but a lot of studios have because the public spoke. We'd rather just subscribe to a streaming service to get all that, and then they take it away and we complain, and then we completely forget about it. Because E3VL says streaming is a thing. Yes, it's a thing until it goes down, or they take something away, or they delist it, whereas I can still watch my DVDs and my Blu-rays, even if the movie gets taken off of streaming services. Also, 4K Blu-rays do have a higher quality than streaming. The bit rate is a lot higher. The audio seems to me sounding a little bit better. If I watch the same movie that I have on a 4K Blu-ray and I watch a 4K stream of it, even the audio seems a little bit better. And I don't know if that's real or not. It may just be a trick of my imagination. But I do know that the video bit rate is higher on a disc than it is when you're streaming it. And DJ Romas says, interestingly enough, streaming is king in the U.S., but not so much in other countries. And E3VL says, buying physical digital is quicker than going to the store. But once again, you're paying for not as high of a bitrate. I'm not going to say lower quality, but like not as high of a bitrate on your video. And then let's say you buy it digitally. What if that service goes down? What if that service is gone? Like... what if, because what is it called? It's Fandango at Home now, but that used to be Vudu, right? And so let's say you bought movies on Fandango at Home, and then they go under. All those movies you bought, because remember, you don't actually buy the movie. You don't own the movie. You own a license to the content at the pleasure of the place that you bought the license for. That's why in California, now they have to disclose that you're just buying a license to the content. Even on Amazon, you're just buying a license to the content. And E3VL says, well, physical discs degrade. Yeah, but not as quickly as streaming services degrade and take things off. I still have DVDs that play just fine that I bought in the late 90s, early 2000s. They play just fine. Yeah, they degrade over time, but not in like the 1 year that Netflix takes a movie off of streaming. My VHS tapes still play. And yes, I have VCRs, but like they still play, and those are from the 80s. So there are obviously ways through around that. If you sail the seven seas, you keep your own stuff, and that way, you know, and I understand that, but I could either invest in, you know, a big Plex server and downloading everything and keeping them in my Plex server and then making sure that it's on my network is good enough for everything to stream from my Plex server, and I could do all that, or I could just have a disc on the shelf that I pull down and put in my player. Questbus says, I still have music CDs from the 90s that work fine. Eventually, they might stop working, but perhaps not in my lifetime. But hey, convenience. You know, you could have the disc, like, you know, you could either have the movie sent to you on 4K Blu-ray and you have to wait, you know, if it arrives on launch day, or you could just have it ready at 3 a.m. and just immediately just start watching it. There is a price to pay for that convenience. D5T says, Blu-rays are so cheap now, go to secondhand stores because you'll find something you like eventually. And a lot of people dumped their Blu-ray collection. A lot of people dumped their DVD collection. They're like, why do I need this? Netflix has it. Until it doesn't, but Netflix has it. At least vinyl is making a comeback. Vinyl records, which, by the way, there aren't manufacturing places in the United States that make vinyl records, just so you know. A lot of indie bands have started releasing their stuff on vinyl, but they have to get them made in other countries. Usually, I think like Europe is a big thing, a place that makes a lot of vinyl records. But anyway, there aren't mass vinyl record manufacturing facilities in the United States, which means your vinyl records might also get a little bit more expensive, although they're not, I don't think they're very much China. So it's a 10% tariff and they may just eat the cost. But like there's a lot of bands that like a lot of merch is made in tariffed countries. And so, you know, that band t-shirt that you already thought was expensive at $30 is, you might have to go up to $50 or $60, and then you're definitely not going to buy it. And so the band's not going to get the money for the merch, and they're not going to get their own profit margins off of it. And there's no point in them selling merch. And Pod Culture already says vinyl is flipping expensive. It is, because there's not that many places that make vinyl records. We used to have more vinyl record manufacturing facilities, even here in the United States. But when vinyl went out, all the production of the facilities that made vinyl records left. They closed down. They repurposed. They're like, well, vinyl's not the thing now. Let's do something else. And so we haven't built back up that industry. Like I said, it's also the value that people are willing to pay for it, because a lot of vinyl now, when I started collecting vinyl records, it was just before everybody really got back on the vinyl train. It was like, you know, a year or two before. So I would go in and I'd get like these amazing albums because they were all used for like $2, $3, things like that. And then vinyls got back into popularity. And a lot of younger people thought it was a novel thing to have a physical manifestation of your music because they were so used to Spotify. Why do I need an album? I've got Spotify. But here they have a physical manifestation of their music. And that's a novel thing for a lot of younger generations. And it came back with vinyl, not really CDs and not really cassettes. Although I do know some people that were younger that are like enamored with cassette tapes. But oh, it's really vinyl. And then everybody's like, okay, now we're going to re-release all our stuff on vinyl, and we're going to have it on 320-gram vinyl, and we're going to do a colored vinyl and all this stuff. And so now, yeah, that I'm going to use Metallica. That Metallica album that I probably could have, if I had found it, could have probably gotten for $3 to $5 since it's been remastered. It's one of their 80s albums is like $50 now. Because they reissued it, and you know it costs a lot more to make vinyls now than it did back then, and it's not the used version. Questbuster says, one of the reasons I have my Xbox Series X is that it can play the OG Xbox discs. I loaded up Panzer Dragoon Orta a few days ago and realized that I must have had great reflexes back then. Not so much now. I found that, like, I've booted up games that I had before, and I'm like, I did this with Blur lately. I actually still have an Xbox 360, and I put Blur in it, and I am not as good as at Blur as I was 15 years ago when I last played it. So that happens. That sucks about getting old. But yeah, but also, those aren't every disc. Because remember, Panzer Dragoon Orta, if you play that, even though it's an OG Xbox game, they had to make it emulatable. Not every Xbox game works on an Xbox Series X. Not every Xbox 360 game works on an Xbox Series X. Specifically, Blur doesn't work on an Xbox Series X. So they had to wind up emulating it. So it's actually not even playing the disc. The disc is your key. The disc is a game key card. It is a unlock key for you to download the version off the internet, and that's what you're playing. So unfortunately, like, that's not a real apt comparison, because you're not playing the disc. You're playing a downloaded, emulated version created for the Xbox One X and the Xbox One architecture, let's say. It's an updated version that works with the Xbox One architecture that the disc only acts as a game key, which means if the disc degrades right now, you're still fine because it just needs to know it's the disc. And then it's not actually reading the data off of the disc. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them to see what's going on there. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. So should Mario Kart World have lowered its scope of features to be at a lower price point?
It is so hard to say, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's this crossroads we're at in this industry. I do think maybe they were a little aggressive. I always expected that Mario Kart would be $70. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be, you know, fine. But I really do think people are feeling that extra $10. And what I think people are going to really feel, I mean, honestly, what it comes down to for me is this whole Breath of the Wild, for people that have never bought it before, have to rebuy the DLC now as well. If they never owned it before, if you already own the DLC, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But it'll cost you $90 to get up to speed with everything from the first Breath of the Wild game. And if that was Skyrim, Bobby, people would be losing their effing minds. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like Nintendo does need to come back and have a conversation about what the real expectation is in the industry about pricing.
Yeah.
Now, if history shows anything, is that if the demand isn't there and people don't buy it, Nintendo will be forced to make a change. That's what happened with the 3DS. Mm-hmm. You know, Nintendo finally sold the console at a loss because of what happened with the initial launch of the 3DS, which in part was their own poor planning with software, but I digress. If people don't buy it, Nintendo's hand will be forced, and they will have to make changes to that. But the problem is, who's not going to buy Mario Kart? And, you know, they have the baked in version with the consoles. My hope is that those bundles aren't impossible to find. That's kind of my worry right now.
Yeah.
Is they keep talking about these, you know, system only consoles and these Mario Kart only ones. How many of those Mario Kart ones are really going to be out there? Or mm-hmm. how many people are going to end up being suckered into paying $30 extra because they can't find the bundle one out there? I think that $500 bundle makes Mario Kart World in particular feel like a little bit less of a bitter pill. But I really think Nintendo is in for some surprises when it comes to, you know, $80 price tags on games from last generation.
Yeah. And ultimately, gamers in 2025 don't care that in the late 90s in Canada, Nintendo games were $80 and $90. Nobody cares.
Well, that video that was circulating on Blue Sky this week, which I think you were kind of referring to earlier, really hit the nail on the head. It's the fact that people are really getting awakened to the fact that they're not making more money. Video yeah. games are costing more money, but you're mm-hmm. not making more money. CEOs are making more money, yep. but you're not making more money. And maybe this isn't particularly about Nintendo CEO in this case. But Nintendo is still, you know, a symptom of a greater illness in the gaming industry with, you know, how much, you know, and then there was that whole argument about, well, would you pay it for the employees to get a living wage? How about the employees get that today from deducting it from all the fat cats at the top that aren't needed? Like this, this is a problem, and this is a problem not limited to the gaming industry.
No, it's not.
But it's interesting that the gaming industry is often, well, maybe not often, but has been known to be the canary in the coal mine for some real big political issues in this country.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, I do actually, like, I don't know that much about Japanese developer culture and software developer culture, and but I believe that they're actually treated somewhat better, and also Japan's cost of living is different as well.
And
so,
I would like to believe that, too.
But yeah. I don't know. I'm not there, you know. I know what it's like here, and you know, I know what we're going through here in mostly the non-gaming industry, and you know, like I am being paid fairly myself, but that's just me. There's a lot of people that aren't, and you know, yeah, I'm making a lot more money. I'm not a millionaire, but like I'm making more money than I did 10 years ago. I'm making a lot more money than I was 15 years ago. So like, I know I personally can pay $80 for a Mario Kart World, but most people can't. A lot of people can't.
It won't be as fun without the people to play it with.
Right. And, you know, but I'm also the same person that goes and buys a pinball machine for $11,000. So I'm not really the person that should be talking about what games should be charging because I'm part of the problem because I'll buy the expensive stuff. And then I'll invite people over to play on the expensive stuff at my place.
I consider myself pretty fortunate and lucky with where I am in life as well, but I there's a lot of millionaires. I am not a millionaire, but there's a lot of millionaires out there that still shop at Target.
Yeah.
To get controversies aside, this is, you know, they shop at Target to get the deals. And that's kind of, you know, I'm certainly not a millionaire, but I'm thinking about, okay, well, could I maybe lower the cost of that $80 video game by buying the $100 worth of gift cards at Costco for $90 to help sort of save money there? You know, that'll get me Mario Kart, you know, or whatever $80 title I want in the future and an indie game, you know, with that. You know, there's other ways. I wonder also as well what might happen on the retail fronts, the Best Buys, the Game Flops of the world, to try to entice people into stores by more of these, you know, limited prints, limited edition things to encourage people to pay that higher $80 price. Or, you know, maybe retailers that straight up take a hit on their end and charge $74 for it, you know, $5 on sale out the gate just to make it a little more, you know, attractive to buy from them versus digital. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah. I mean, cause like, especially the retailers probably looking at like, well, all these are digital, you know, these digital games and, you know, they're worried they're going to have to go out of business because there's not going to be new physical games. So maybe they do that where they take a small hit in the short term to try to tell Nintendo, hey, keep making games physical. And keep supplying us with games so we stay in business. Like there's always those negotiations to, and that's why you know, they may not have as much of a markup, and that's where you would get that $74.99. Just for people that are wondering how they could do that, it's basically the retailer will take the hit and take less money from you to try to convince Nintendo to keep making physical games. But then again, Nintendo's like, well, we priced it at $80 and people bought it, and that's what they cost now.
And to woo people to come into the store and buy them and sell them to people that wouldn't have bought them otherwise or would have bought it digitally. You know, that's the whole, you know, Walmart is very good at this as a company. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what develops with that.
Yeah. So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Oh, gosh. Can we think about something that's not Switch 2? Okay, yes, we can. We have an upcoming video game. Boy, this isn't just Bobby Blackwolf mode. This is ultra Bobby Blackwolf mode. You ready for this? What if I told you there was a very hard boss fight, and when you flopped at killing the boss, it comes up with a screen that says, would you like to skip this fight? And instead, we'll show you storyboards or, you know, a cutscene with what you missed in that fight, and the game will continue. So you can just not do the boss fight. that's Ultra Bobby Blackwell. Yeah, that mode, is. And that's coming up in an upcoming release. I don't actually think it's a bad thing. Yeah. I know, you know, some people want to gatekeep games and stuff, but you know, if you look at video games and getting through it like a movie, which this particular release is, some of you already know what it is. But I'll leave you with the ultimate tease that it's a video game from a guy who really wants to do movies. You know, this will allow you to experience the story, so, and this is a director who wants his games experienced.
Yeah, so I've started playing a game very recently on Game Pass that actually has the option. It's like, you can just skip all the battles. Mm. Just every single battle. You can just be like, no, I'm not going to play the battles. And it's like, I haven't played it enough to get to the first battle because I did not turn that off, but I am playing on an easier difficulty. It's South of Midnight, by the way, for people that are wondering, is the game that I'm talking about, which is, it's a very story heavy, it's from Compulsion Games. They made Contrast, was another game that We Happy Few.
Oh yeah.
They're the We Happy Few devs. And South of Midnight, the story actually takes place in the Louisiana Bayou. And so it's bringing in a lot of the folklore of the Deep South, which I'm from the South. I'm not from the Deep South. There's a difference between I grew up in Atlanta and I grew up in the Mississippi River Delta. And this game has a lot of the folklore from Louisiana, from Mississippi, from the rural parts of Florida and things like that. But it has, you know, there's a story going through, and there's still like platforming and stuff and climbing, it's not yellow paint, it's white paint, but climbing on the white paint to get across areas. But there's a way that you can be like, yeah, no, I just don't want to do any of the battles. And because all the battles are in like big battle arenas, like it's in like an open circle area. And apparently the battles are kind of repetitive. Like they really focus more on the story and the setting than the battle mechanics. But they give you the option to just view it as a play. Basically, you run to the next scene, and then you just see the scene. And South of Midnight does that now, and it just hit Game Pass as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually downloaded that. I just haven't stepped into it yet. Didn't get around to it this week, but sounds very interesting.
Yeah. That came out, and then also apparently if you're on the Game Pass kick, check out Blue Prince. So,
oh, is that the roguelike where you're building the house?
Yes, it is.
I want to see that. Yeah.
It hit Game Pass this week as well. It's kind of grabbed me, but not really grabbed me. It's one of those, like, it is so much, it's puzzles, but you really should have like a notebook, and you should be taking like notes of like things that you don't think is real, because that's how you solve puzzles. But then every day, you know, the house resets, but you still know the solution of the puzzles. And as you go through, so it's actually there's a lot of people that are saying it's their game of the year, and they're
it's
like
April. I know, down.
But they're comparing it to like Outer Wilds, not Outer Worlds, but Outer Wilds, and kind of like like how it knocks you on your socks, you know, and you want to go into it knowing the least amount about it. It's one of those kind of like it's same as Outer Wilds. And so it was interesting. I played that for a little bit. I got through like 2 days, and I was like, okay, I see what it's trying to do, but I'm just not in the headspace to take like copious notes.
Yeah.
Because
interesting.
Yeah. So it is called Blueprints.
I'm going to check that one out, but I'm going to leave you with one more tease for tonight.
Okay.
We have CEO good news, a CEO doing a good thing, a CEO we want to compliment.
Awesome.
I know, it's amazing.
Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. I'm going to just check real quick. I don't think I'm going to be here in 2 weeks. I think I'm going to be gone that weekend. I'm just making sure I have it correct. So let's see here. No, I will not be here on the 27th. So next week I'm here. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be taking some time off, and we will return in May for that. In Pod Culture Ask Bizarro World CEO, you're going to have to tune into Orange Lounge Radio to find out. That's it for me. Find me on Discord. VogNetwork.com/Discord is our Discord server, or at BobbyLeBackWolf.com on Blue Sky. You can find more of what I say there. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for anybody. or it's not for anybody. It's not for everybody. I've said the same line for years, and then I mess it up tonight. Is the show for anybody? I hope so. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. However, we would not be able to make all this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. So thank you so much for Podculture for resubscribing tonight for the 69th time. He said nice. I think that's nice. Dark Tetsuya resubscribed, said 51 months. A little early for an Action 52 joke, but I'll save that for one more month. Also, a three-year streak. Thank you, Twitch Math. Thank you, Twitch Math. And then Tiger Claw resubscribed. Thank you so much for that. All right. This show is for anybody. It may not be for you, but it's for anybody out there. I'm going to hit the button before I mess up a line that I've said for years on this show. I'll see you next week. Be good to each other. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.